Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Don't sweat the technique. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jalen Green, 38 burger yesterday. Big time. I don't even think he had a great shooting night. I know he made a lot, but he took 18 threes. Like, he shot less than 50% from three. Like, he wasn't, I mean, he scored tons of points, 38. I'll take it every single night. You know, no doubt about that. But it wasn't like an elite shooting night. Like, you have an elite shooting night from three, you hit, you know, 75%. Like, that's kind of what I'm
from three,
like, optimistic about. He was 8 of 18 from three.
Yeah, but I'm not saying an elite shooting night.
Elite shooting night? Like, you're on a heater? Absolutely.
From three, 75%.
Yeah.
I think it's way too high. I think
an elite shooting night, less than 75%. We're talking about one game, not over the course of a year, obviously.
I understand that, but you can be go on a heater from three, but you're still – it's a tough shot to make. It's not a 50-50 ball like just shots from the field. I just think that's high.
Steph Curry, 5 for 9. In game one, and that's not a great shooting night for Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Like, Jalen Green's had nights where he goes like 5 for 7 from three.
All right, we agree to disagree.
I mean, it's not an opinion though. It's like a fact. Like, this is like, you can look at this
75%.
Stuff. It is a fact. Okay. Like, you can look up games where he has had nights like that.
Right, I don't disagree that he's had nights like that, but I think an elite shooting night from three is maybe 60% at best, but 75% is unbelievable.
Fine. Okay, so let's go with 60. He didn't shoot 60% yesterday. He shot less than 50. Like, he didn't have an elite shooting night. That's the point.
Okay.
Like, so that's awesome. Like, he had 38 points and didn't have an elite shooting night. Like, he had a good shooting night, but.
I like the fact that overall, I thought he took better shots. Make or miss.
You talking about me nitpicking you.
I mean, okay, sometimes.
I don't mind it for what it's worth.
Okay. The fact to me is, when I went back and looked, and then I know that other people were like hell-bent on putting together all of his misses and makes and what he did and what he didn't do. When I went back and watched game one again after the game happened, I just thought his shot selection was bad. It was It was a lot of contested, sometimes double-teamed, sometimes forced, a lot of times forced looks. I thought he let the game come to him a lot more in game two. And make or miss, I will live with. If he gets that look from three or anywhere else on the court, and it's within the flow of the offense, as you know the saying goes, but it's more of a he's not forcing the action every time. It's the ball coming to him as the next open guy. I'll live with that because I think that's who he is.
I agree with you. Like, I didn't think he had a great shooting night yesterday. I really don't. Texture says Joel is right. Another texture, 75 is insane. Steph Curry is the greatest 3-point shooter in history. 60% is elite. 44 is still great. Okay. I'll concede 75% was too high. I'll go with Blanker's number, 60%. He was under that. He was under 50%. Like, he had a good shooting night, not a great shooting night. Now, for his standard, maybe we could say it's great. Like, it's relative, all that stuff. But he can shoot much better than what he 18 threes, like a great shooting night for him. If he takes 18 threes, I think he's capable of making 10, maybe 11.
Yeah, and I think that again, when he is on a heater, 50% is probably right there at about what when he's really, really hot, that I would expect him to knock down. Because a lot of them are still difficult. The difficulty level on the shots he's taking from three, again, are not just those. Hey, you got plenty of time to read the label because the ball swung to you. He gets so much attention that it's tougher for him. But I've said over and over again since he came into the league, he's not a shooter, he's a scorer. And scorers are going to shoot at a high volume to get their points.
I mean, he's had 19 games this year where he shot 50% or better from three. Like, that's a pretty big number. He's had 6 of 60% or more. He's had 2 of greater than 75% or more.
Okay. I just don't think that – in my book, he's a shooter. I think he's a scorer. And so,
no, I don't disagree there. But he has had nights where he hits half of his threes. He's had a lot of nights where he hits half of his threes.
To the point that I made following what you said, I think on the nights when he's hit the higher percentages, the volume of shots isn't around 15 to 18 to 20. I think that they're more probably less than 10, more like single-digit attempts.
Five of those games I mentioned were double digits. If you want to throw in 45% or greater, there's four other double-digit games.
Okay. I just think that's I think 18's a lot of threes.
It's the most he's taken all year.
Yeah, and if he made nine of those, I'd be absolutely tickled. I think that'd be fantastic. But I also I commend him on the fact that a lot of what we talked about after game one, he rectified. He attacked. He waited and let the game come to him. He got the shots that were better looks, and he took the shots that weren't as the degree of difficulty and contested nature. I thought that he played as good as he possibly could have played, coming off about as bad as he could have played.
I think he could have shot it better. Obviously, I'm taking this game every time. I'm not saying, like, oh, my goodness, we're overrating. No, Jalen Green played great. Like, don't get it twisted. I think he is capable of even having a bigger night, is what I'm saying. Like, I don't think he shot it as great as he can do. I don't think he was on a heater last night. I don't. Like, you shoot 44% in a game. That's not a heater, in my opinion. But he played awesome. I mean, nearly 40 points. The thing – go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the same conversation we had at Steph Curry. I'll ask you, do you think Jalen Green has another 30-burger in this series?
Okay, that's a loaded question.
No, it's not.
Well, I think it's loaded because I don't think he has to have a 30-burger. Where I think Steph Curry has to have a 30-burger. Like, for Golden State to win this series, I think Steph Curry has to be scoring nearly 30 points a game. For the Rockets to win this series, I don't think Jalen Green has to score 30. So that's why I say it's loaded. Do I think he does it again? I would say that Vegas would probably handicap it at no. Mm-hmm. It'd probably be pretty close to a pick 'em, but probably no. Maybe no minus 110, 120.
Yeah, I kind of lean that he might. I mean, I don't think he's going to have 38. I think that he'll broach 30 again because these games happen, and we've seen them. And it's the consistency is what I'm always harping on, but the fact that when he gets it going, whether the percentage is as good as, you know, you'd like or not, the fact is he gets it done because he does the things that we've been talking about. Like, if it's not going early, get to the line, get to the basket, take care of, I mean, use your strengths. He hangs in the air forever. He draws contact very well. He finishes around the basket. That can get him going. And once he gets going, he gets that confidence and he can really go. So yeah. I would almost lean that there might be one more in his back pocket. And you're right. He doesn't have to.
Yeah.
But
to
I think
me, that's
he might.
The more important question. Like, to me, that's what matters. Like, it doesn't matter if the Rockets win or Jalen scores 30. And I think that, I mean, obviously it's the Rockets winning. But I believe Curry getting 30 is more important to Golden State than Jalen Green getting 30 is to the Rockets. And it probably speaks to the depth that the Rockets
have. Yeah, that's part of it. And then to me, looking at it from a Rockets perspective, I still think that he has to be consistently living in that 20-25 point range for the Rockets to win games. Whether he gets to 30 or not, because I'm still looking at this going, yeah, Alpi had a good game. Didn't have a great game, but he had a really good game, and he had another double-double. But when you're looking at who else is going to contribute to that and how much can they contribute, I think it's very similar. I don't think maybe Jalen doesn't have to get 30, but I think Jalen has to be in the 20-25 range every game that they win in this series for them to get victories.
See, I don't think so. I think it could be even like as little as 15, but he has to be making the right plays. He needs to have a high number of assists, and he has to limit the turnovers, and he has to be efficient. Like, he can't have 15 on 25 shots. But if they're like try to take him out of the game and say he has 10 or 11 shots, has 15 points, has 7 or 8 assists, and plays really good defense, they can win that way. If he has an efficient 15, they're still capable of winning. Now, inefficient 15, they're toast.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at it going, okay, I think that those two guys are the head of the snake for both teams. I think that Curry is, and I think that Green is. I think that Şengün is going to – I think he's going to get you a double-double, and he has a huge advantage, as we talked about in this series. But I think a healthy Jimmy Butler is going to give you what Şengün gives you, maybe more on the points some nights. But I think that those two guys can be a wash. When I look at the rest ofs, as much as, yeah, we talked about the lack of depth and who else steps up for Golden State, I look at the Rockets in this series and I go, as I don't care what they did in the regular season. I'm looking at them going, well, if he doesn't in one of those games, if we do want to say that the Warriors need Curry more than the Rockets need Jalen, who will? Who will? Because, I mean, Jabari giving me...
I think they have a bunch of options. Like, I mean, Alpi. Like, I would start with Alpi.
But I put him in the equation. I'm taking Jimmy and Steph, and I'm taking Alpi and Green out.
I mean, the Rockets have a bunch of guys who can give you, you know, double-digit points. Like, Tari Eason did it yesterday. Like, Tari Eason was knocking down some shots, like, out of nowhere. Like, okay. Like, all right, Tari. I see what you're doing. I mean, he scored 14. Like, he's capable of doing it. Dylan Brooks, especially against a mismatch, I mean, he can get you 20-25. He's not going to do it every night, but in one singular game he can, especially when Steph Curry's guarding him. We've seen him in Thompson pop off for 20. I mean, Jabari could hit four or five threes. I think they have options.
See, but I think Podemski could do that. I think that...
Yeah, he could.
I think that Moody could do that. I think that... Moody can give you 10, 12, 14
points. I like Podinsky more than Moody, though. That was what the was for.
Yeah, I mean, again, if we're just talking about 10 to 14, I think there are some guys on Golden State's roster. Now, do I think that the Rockets are deeper and have more of those guys? Absolutely, I do.
I mean, Golden State's obviously more dependent on Steph and Butler than the Rockets are on Alpi and Jalen. I mean, both teams are obviously dependent on both of their duos, but – if you took Curry and Butler away from Golden State, they're one of the worst teams in the NBA.
Yeah, I think
you
Green
take Jalen and Alpi away from the Rockets,
game,
they still might win like 35, you know?
Yeah, I think Draymond could walk into, you know, on the nights where early in the first quarter, a three or two falls down.
Not as the best player, though. Like, if you
took Butler and Curry off the floor,
like, now you have, like, a better defender on Draymond, and their defensive philosophy isn't leaving. Like, they left him wide open from three. You know, when Draymond hit that first three yesterday, I said yes. I said, okay, that is good. Because what does that mean? It means he's going to take six of those bad boys. Like, I was happy when he made his first three last night.
I'm not saying he's going to be the leader of the team. If you're saying, could he get 12 to 14? Yes, he could.
Yeah.
But I also look at most of the guys that the Rockets are throwing out there in that same scenario going, I don't know that they're going to be the leader of the team if your name isn't one of those two guys.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're certainly having a conversation here on the margins. Like,
yeah, Dylan and Fred, okay. And Dylan more so than Fred, but Fred is fully capable of a 15 to 20 point game.
Right, right. And those other guys you mentioned for Golden State are too. 713-780 ESPN texter says Joel is right on this one. Israel, hang tight. We're going to get you on the other side. A bunch of texters are saying, guys, the Texans made a trade. Yep, the Texans made a trade today. Texans traded a fifth round pick for 2 6ths and a 7th. They traded pick 166 and a future fifth for pick 179, pick 216, pick 255. We're not going to jump off the Rockets for a bunch of late-round draft picks. We will talk draft, and we'll talk about it in great detail a little bit later, but we're not going to leave the heat of the Jalen Green conversation for a late-round pick swap. We'll get to draft in a little bit, though. 713-780-ESPN. Callers hang tight. Texters are hot about it as well. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Talking Rockets. Texas says, great, Israel. An emoji with the censorship over the face. So there's that. All right, so let's go out to Israel. Texter, he's not happy that you're calling in. I will warn you, so you gotta come strong. But welcome into the Hive. How you doing?
Yeah, today? What's up? Hey. Jalen, officially, at the last game, is a star. I wouldn't trade him for KD right now. Head up. Throwing up for, I would not. But they got to treat him like KD now. He got to be aggressive and keep that same energy, bro. He got to keep the same energy. I was surprised. He got the game, bro. He got the game. He got to keep that same energy. He don't get paid anyway. But Houston need the Rockets need to keep him, man. I would, you know, they need to get around Shepherd, man. But him, He that guy. That's all I got to say. He been bum. He was stepped up into another realm, bro. He got to keep it going, but they got to, and Glenn Bleek got it, like I had text. He got to do like he did in Toronto. They got to feed him the ball. You know what I mean? Treat him like a KD. That's
how
all.
Are both of these guys going to get that many shots up, Israel?
No, I think he's saying that Fred's got to feed the ball to Jalen.
Oh, okay. I got you. He needs to be a facilitator. Okay, I misunderstood. My bad.
Bro, he, I would not head up. And so if I was the owner and they say, okay, I'll give you Kevin Durant for him, I wouldn't do it because he got the same skill set. Even though I've been following KD, man, since he was at Texas and a freshman, and he can knock him down from out of bounds. But this guy... After the last game, I was like, yo, he put him between his way or whatever. He gotta stay aggressive. He gotta be hungry. He gotta be hungry though. All right, y'all.
Yeah. Appreciate you, Israel.
Thanks, Israel.
He's high on Jalen. He's high on a lot
Very
of things.
Very high on Jalen.
He's high on Jalen.
I was gonna start throwing other names at him to see if I take Kevin Durant out of the equation. Would you make
a lot of things with the Jalen. I mean, you couldn't trade Green for Durant straight up because of the money. But even if you could, I don't think the Rockets would. And it's not because of, like, their stature and how great they are. It's because of the age. Like, they're not going to trade a guy who's in his prime for Durant who has just, like, a couple years left, few years left.
Yeah, you're talking about guys – I mean, not saying that this is scenarios or anything like that, but guys that we brought up when they were throwing trade scenarios out. Trae Young, Ja Morant, guys kind of in the younger ilk where you can say, I'm not just going to get 2 or 3 years out of a guy like Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a guy that has a lot of years left like Jalen and getting a guy back that maybe even a little bit more proven that has as many years or close to the same amount of years as Jalen.
Yeah, and he's not going to score 38 every night. Like, no. You just want him to be effective, make the right play. And where I agree with Israel is with the aggression. Like, I like aggressive Jalen Green. I don't like it when he's passive, so I agree with this point on that.
But controlled aggression, right? Because game one, we saw him dribbling into double teams, dribbling with his head down. Yeah, because to his point that I was going to make before we took his call is it's not – regardless of what we get out of Jalen or Şengün, they're reliant on how the other guys in their starting lineup and that in their rotation play. Fred is exactly what they need him to be if he's facilitator first, 10 shots or less, and that he's trying to make sure that they make the right plays possession to possession. Fred is a nightmare as he was in game one when his first mentality is, I need to shoot and I need to shoot from anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, he still didn't shoot any very good last night. Still jacked up 7. K. Crow on YouTube, we need Van Vliet to hit 35% of his threes. He's been terrible. He was 2 for 8 yesterday, 1 for 7 from 3. Ime tried to, like, defend him in the post game, which, I mean, good coach is going to do. He's like, well, you know, he's guarding Draymond on the defensive end. He's taking away a lot of their point of action with what they do offensively. When a man's off the floor, he's picking up Curry 94 feet. You know, he's got to initiate the offense. So he's kind of like, you know, defending him for poor shooting nights. But I do agree. Like, if the Rockets are to win this series, they're going to need a little more from Fred VanVleet. They can't live with him going 2 for 13 from 3, 1 for 7 from 3. They're going to have to pick – he's going to have to pick up his shooting. Just a bit. Not a lot. Just a bit.
Plus, I think that when I say that the guys around those two guys, and particularly Jalen, they have to do what they're supposed to do. If Fred is facilitating correctly, Dylan Brooks probably deserves more shots. Because Dylan Brooks is a good three-point shooter. And if Jalen is doing what he's on attack mode, then they got to collapse when he gets in the lane. When he starts putting the ball on the floor, multiple defenders are going to come to him. That means someone else is going to be open. And if they play their cards right, that means Dylan should probably get some pretty clean looks at three if they're playing the way they're supposed to play.
I thought he had a bunch of clean looks yesterday. And, you know, he didn't take a ton of them. But he was 6 for 12, 2 for 5 from 3. Dylan shot it fine.
Yeah.
I'm with, like, hey, shoot a little bit more.
Yep.
That's okay. I don't hate you for that.
Look, again, I wasn't a believer in his consistent 3 game. This year he had one hell of a year shooting the ball from 3. He deserves the opportunity, if he wants to shoot those balls. You're right. There were times last night that I thought he should have shot the ball when he got it behind the line.
Asim says Jabari's underused, needs run. I'm okay with the minutes Jabari's getting, but I would like him to shoot a little bit more. 24 minutes, he only took 4 shots. Like, 25 minutes is fine by me, but maybe get it to 6 or 7 shots.
And he's been knocking them down, too, shooting. Right? He had the big had the big three in when they brought the game back with him and Steven Adams in game one. And when he does get clean looks or when he gets the ball, he's making his shots. He's just not taking a lot of them.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Back to the HRNP listener line. Justin, you're in the hive with the bees. What's up, Justin?
Hey, guys. I'm not much of a sports talk radio call-in. I don't think I've called in since I was in college 20 years ago and broke looking to win some chicken wings. But the 75% threshold for elite shooting literally was so outlandish, it compelled me to call in. I know you've tried to walk that back since, but I went back and looked at some stats real quick. There's only ever been two players in the history of the playoffs to make 10 or more three-pointers in a game. Lillard has done it twice, and Klay Thompson once. And those numbers are 12 for 17 for Lillard at 70%. That's the best three-point performance in the history of the NBA playoffs. Klay Thompson, 11 for 18 at 61%, would be the second-best three-point performance, followed by Lillard, 10 for 18 at 55%. And there have only been 18 times when a player has made more than Jalen Green's 8 three-pointers last night. And on top of that, he went 5 for 7 on his two-point shot. So I'm not going to say it was an elite game. Mainly I'm calling to just put into perspective how absurd the 75% number was. So anyway, no further comments.
Justin, thank you for breaking your celibacy. We appreciate you being a part of the Hive. You can call again.
Yeah, the one concern I did have with Jabari real quick, I would say, is he did hit some threes that were wide open. I think it was late third, early fourth maybe. There were times when I was thinking, why is he not on the floor more? I know he's dealt with some injuries. But whenever he was handling the ball, there were some moments that just looked cringeworthy. So I don't really know what's going on there. Maybe it's just getting back into the game. But I certainly thought Jabari needs more minutes. But there's also some times where he makes me completely flip-flop on that opinion. So anyway. All I'm going to listen. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Good call, Justin. Yes, you're welcome whenever.
I don't want Jabari handling the ball.
Hold on, let me own it. Let me wear it. Let me take it. Let me give Justin his flowers. You got me, Justin. You got me. I admit that I am wrong. I overshot it at 75%. That was way too high of a number. I should have went with 60. 60 is an elite shooting night from behind the three-point line. The volume, like Blanker's mentioned and like you proved, should probably lessen that number. The more shots, you know, probably should lessen the three-point shooting percentage. You argued it very well. That was an elite call. You got me. I just had to sit there and wear it because you won. I'll take the L on that one. I concede. I am a big, giant loser, and I was at big time wrong. And in fact, during the call, I pulled up, we have a document for Bad Take Boulevard. Justin, I put myself on Bad Take Boulevard for saying that 75% from three, especially at that volume, would be an elite category. So I own it. Give me the big giant L. And chicken wings is a great idea. I might do that tonight. B-Dubs has the all-you-can-eat on Thursday. You have to go to the Manhattan B-Dubs and stuff my mouth with a bunch of wings during this draft. Could be worse places.
There you go. No,
but good call, Justin.
You're a wing connoisseur, so that's big.
I am. Love some wings. All right, people still want to talk the Rockets. We'll get to draft here in a little bit, too. 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Still licking my wounds from Justin owning me. It'll be a stranger. Texter says under on Jalen Green in game 3. Well, I mean.
Under what?
Under points.
I know, man. 30 or?
I think he's saying whatever Vegas has it at. I mean, he didn't put much context. I'm assuming he means what Vegas has it at. I don't think Vegas has it out yet, but what would you put the line at? For Jalen Green, points, game 3 in the Golden State.
25.
I think Vegas is going to have it lower. I think Vegas will have it around...
First road game in the playoffs
21,
may affect it, but
21
I think...
and a half, maybe? Maybe it's too low. Maybe 20. What would you say? 25?
25. Yeah.
Let's meet in the middle. 23 points, Jalen Green, over-under.
He goes over.
Okay. Yeah. Now I'm going to look to see what the prop bet is for Jalen in game three, whenever that number is out and available.
Yeah, I just feel like, look, I think it's going to be a different scenario for him to have his first time ever, you know, going through a road game in the playoffs. But I think that he has an exorbitant amount of confidence coming off of what he did. I think that it kind of – he's comfortable now in this series. And I think that, again, like you were kind of talking about, I don't think he has to have a 30-burger, but I think that he normally, when he plays his game, is hovering around 20 anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's 21 on the year, something like that. Mm-hmm. Then you factor in playoff, Golden State, on the road. Yeah, that would be an interesting number to track. That means he's done. Dang it, I was rooting for Jalen. A texter saying that Israel put the curse on Jalen. Another texter says,
yes,
shut that clown up when talking about it. What, Israel's not a clown. Come on. Israel's great content for this show and has strong takes. Mm-hmm. I liked the second part of his take about Jalen needing to be always aggressive and not passive. Texter, give me Fred, Dylan, Amin, and Jabari over the Warriors bunch after the stars are removed. They only have Hild, Kuminga, and Draymond. Kuminga only played, too, because Butler got hurt. Like he was a DNP. Been a DNP for a while now.
It's weird. I think they took – I believe they took Kuminga before they took Moody, and early on they were all about – they got to re-sign Kuminga, and now they're all on Moody, and Kuminga fell out of favor, so – But those two guys, I mean, look, I was a big fan of Kuminga's game as a young and up-and-coming player, but Moody, they obviously believe more in.
Texter, thank you for your service. He says it's 20.5 right now. O'Brien just said it's 20.5 on underdog, too. I can't believe they already have the prop bets out there. My goodness. So 20.5 for Jalen Green points game three. So you said over on 22, 23? Mm-hmm. So you're over on 20.5.
Yep.
20.5 kind of feels light, doesn't
it? It does feel light. I believe that's probably factoring in the road game, like I said, the first time environment on the road in the playoffs in San Francisco in a tough environment. But I still think he'll find a way to get 24, 25 points.
Yeah, that's interesting. He doesn't need to score 30 again. He needs to do it multiple times to grow as a superstar. He's either that guy or he's not moving forward. And then Texter says, is Amin Thompson underperforming, or is he right where he should be?
I think he's a guy that's kind of taking it all in, and every game is a growth for him, and just by getting the experience. I think he's just fine. You just until you've been through it, you don't know what to expect and how to get to it, and now he's kind of learning along the way. I think he was way better than he was in game one. I think he'll continue to get better in this series.
I think it's hard for him to fill out the stat sheet like he normally does in this series. Like he's heavily responsible for Steph Curry. And he's defending them all the way up the floor, even in pick and rolls, like they're blitzing screens and stuff like that. So he's out on the perimeter. So it's going to be hard for him to put up his, like, especially his rebounding numbers and then his blocks because he's not at the rim. He's, like, on the perimeter. I mean, the scoring, he's never going to be, like, an elite scorer. You really don't want him to take tons of shots unless they're at the rim.
See, I think that's where you're onto something. The same way when we're talking baseball and you're breaking down what you think are more of the more like meaningful stats when we talk about offense or pitching or whatever the case may be. I think from a basketball perspective, you judge Amin differently than a lot of players in this league. Not saying that it's right or wrong, but I think that when he's at his best, he doesn't have to be Jalen Green scoring 20 plus points. He just has to do all the things. You know, the term probably is used too much about Swiss Army knife. But I think when you see him at his best, he's defending, he's rebounding, he's offensive rebounding, he's assisting. He'll still get you about 10, 12 points. But that's not how you should judge him because it's the other things, that all the little things that he does that become big things.
Yeah, I don't want to use the word underperform, but I don't think he's playing his best.
No.
But I also think this is a series where he's going to fill out the stat sheet. Like, the stat sheet to me is irrelevant for Amin Thompson in the series. Because most of, like, what is his most important value in the series? It's defending Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. And, like, where's that going to show up in the box score? It's not. It's going to show up in Steph Curry's point total and his shooting percentage. Like, that's the most important Amin Thompson stat is what does Steph Curry's line score look like? What does his shooting look like? So, but I also don't think he's playing the best that we've seen Amin Thompson play.
Oh, for sure.
I still think that he has something there in this series. I think he's been fine. I didn't love that he got in foul trouble yesterday. But I think he's been fine, not his best.
No, and I think that like I said, I think he's going to get better as the series goes on because I think he's still feeling out everything about the playoffs. And you're right. Unlike the regular season, when you're assigned to a guy in the playoffs, it's a different animal, especially people don't understand. Like, they do these little things now where they can monitor how much a guy runs over the course of a game. Steph runs between like 3 and 5 miles on some games.
Insane.
Like, he is always on the move, and chasing him down will wear your ass out.
It's like a soccer player.
Yeah.
I agree with the scoring, but do you feel his presence is more my question? See, I feel like his presence has been spotty. Like, I felt his presence in game one in the fourth quarter, but I thought he was kind of a no-show in the first three quarters.
I think he got super tight for the first three quarters of game one.
Yeah, like, so I didn't really notice him in the first three quarters, and then they got down 20, and then it's like, okay, here he comes. Yesterday he got into early foul trouble, so it was hard to feel his presence because he was in early foul trouble, but then he had some moments where he was getting to the basket, Euro-stepping for a clean look for, I think it was Dylan Brooks, getting to the dunk spot and dunking one home, playing good defense with Steph. So I think his presence has been spotty, and I think that's why he's not at his best, because we've seen Amen Thompson at times this year where it's not spotty, where Amen Thompson's presence is felt from first horn to final horn.
Yeah, that's why I think that the one that comes to my mind, too, is he drew contact on Draymond, and he was able to finish at the rim and still complete the play, where you're like, okay, he can do those kind of things. I just feel like as the series goes on, he will have his presence felt more. But you do, to your point, you do have to give him a little leeway because of what he's exhausted sometimes on the defensive end.
Yeah. That's job number one in this series. All right, 713-780-ESPN. NFL draft coming up in a little over 2 hours. Willen Dillon, son of a gun. Woo, Nick Caceres already made a trade. Will he be making more trades today? Was this a precursor to a trade? Also, top five girlfriend moments in NFL draft history. I'm also going to tell you what I'm betting tonight. I got a lot on the table, way too much on the table here. All right, it's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? Download it now in your app store.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Hit you with a hezzy. 713-780-ESPN. Top five girlfriend moments in NFL draft history. We were talking about this a little bit the other day, and it popped up on my timeline because our computers and our devices listen to us.
It's great. I saw it. The minute you said that, I saw the tweet. I was like, oh, my God, we just talked about that.
I didn't go search for it. It just it popped right up there on the timeline because our devices are listening to us. Wait, I don't really care either. It's kind of cool. Hey, I'm thinking about this. I'm talking about this. Now you're going to show me more information about this. Okay, I like how it works. It's only the people that have something to worry about, that have something to hide, that are worried about it. Number five was Lucas Van Ness' girlfriend. This was actually the dad moment where Lucas Van Ness' girlfriend hugged Lucas's dad. And Lucas's father gave his son's girlfriend a pat on the rear. Oh. A little double tap, too. Like, it wasn't just one. It was like a little double tap and maybe a little squeeze there. Number four was the Will Levis girlfriend one, where he was sliding and sliding and falling in the draft. Anybody who thought he was going to be a good quarterback are very, very dumb. And then the girlfriend left him for a moment and said, I got to go pee. And that was captured on camera because she was taking forever. Yeah. She didn't expect it to be. Number three was Russell Wilson's girlfriend. The very
wife at the time.
Was it the headline says girlfriend, but I trust you. But the mouth was agape. It was wide. You could run for 1,500 yards in that hole. CD Lamb's girlfriend never touched the second cell phone. That you brought up the other day. Yep. She tried to grab the second cell phone. What's the second cell phone for? It's not for you, sweetie. And then the last one was Isaiah Wilson's girlfriend, the 29th pick, I think it was a couple years ago, where the girlfriend tried to get in on a hug, and the mom, boxed her out like Charles Barkley. The round mound of rebound. It ain't Chuck. It's Isaiah Wilson's mom boxing out the girlfriend.
You think they're still together? Five.
I don't think so.
I would think not.
I would think not as well. So hopefully we get some legendary moments that might crack the top five girlfriend moments in NFL draft history. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Andy, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Andy?
Hey, guys. Hey, talking Texas draft. You know, I don't see – 2 years ago when CJ came on as a rookie, his receiving core was, I mean, nothing to speak of, correct?
Yeah, it wasn't Nico, great.
Yeah, that's right. Nico wasn't Nico before then. And you had a line that had so many injuries, but there's somehow that line, the mismatched line they had all year long, he averaged 269 yards a game. Hell, if he'd have had if he'd have played the two games he was hurt, he would have led the league in yards. So I don't think we need a top wide receiver. I mean, because then you start off the year last year with Nico, Diggs, and Dell, and they didn't produce with all three. They didn't produce nothing because the offensive line sucked. Now I ask you guys right now, are you happy with Cam Robinson at left tackle?
Happy with,
I mean, he's working.
No, I think he's serviceable at best.
Happy with who?
Cam Robinson.
Oh, Cam Robinson. Yeah.
Okay, so you got him at left tackle. You got Howard at probably left guard. I think he'll stick with Fisher at right tackle.
That'd be my guess, too.
Patterson at center. Mm-hmm. And you got to replace Mason, which I think Tomlinson and Ingram both are better than Mason right now. But both of those, Ingram lost his job last year at Minnesota.
Yeah.
So you've got to get – I think CJ is a Manning, Breeze, Brady kind of quarterback. I think he can elevate an average wide receiver. I think he can do that. And so I'm thinking – I actually see – you know, when it got Cam Robinson, I thought to myself, man, Nick, what are you thinking? I think they trade Cam Robinson.
No, they're not going to sign him to draft. Appreciate the call.
One more. They utilize him, and I think Autry's gone too. And I think they move up, and I think they grab a guard and tackle in the first round.
All right. Appreciate the call, Andy. We'll see if that happens. If it does, we'll praise you. You're not going to sign a free agent over the offseason and then immediately trade him in the offseason.
No.
Like, Cam Robinson might not be your starting left tackle. He might be your swing tackle that backs up both positions. Maybe he's just a left tackle for 1 year. Maybe you draft a guy who you can play at left guard and then move him to left tackle a little further along in his career. You bump Titus Howard out to right tackle. Now, what does that mean for Blake Fisher? Probably means he's on the bench. So there are options there. Now, your overall point I agree with. Now, I think Nico Collins, you might be underselling him a little bit. Like, I don't think he's an average receiver. I think he's developed into a really good receiver, even if he didn't have C.J. Stroud in his life. But to your point, Andy, Nico Collins, third rounder, best years with C.J. Stroud. Tank Dell, third rounder, had, whenever he was healthy, was good with C.J. Stroud. I also think that with this draft specifically, it makes a lot of sense to draft a lineman first round and then get a receiver second, third round.
Yeah, I think it's too far-fetched to even think about that they're going to get two first-round picks and they're going to get two offensive linemen in the first round. I think that there's a possibility. I'll say they're going to get a receiver at some point in this draft. Do I think that they're going to do it at 25? Maybe, but probably not. And I think it's all going to be dependent upon like when the runs happen for the different position groups, because we talked about there's five or six offensive linemen. There's probably the same amount of wide receivers. To his point, I don't think that even if you wanted to get a wide receiver one, I'm not sure there's a wide receiver one in this draft, but I think there's plenty of receivers that could help the Texans or any other team in this league. So I think that they are, I mean, I think that it's not that it's a definitive best player available between maybe those two positions. Maybe there's another one, but I think the chances are greater that they trade down than they trade up, to his point of trading up and getting two first rounds.
I'm kind of out on that. I'm kind of out on the trade down. I think they're going to stick and pick. I think they're going to stick. Now, what I think could happen is they trade up in the second round for a receiver that they like. Mm-hmm. I think that that's more plausible, just kind of reading the tea leaves here. But I agree with your point, Andy, about offensive line needs to be the priority there. Now, Ocho would argue you to the death. He thinks Matt Golden needs to be the pick for the Houston Texans, or fold the franchise, I think is what he said. Matt Golden or fold the franchise, according to Ocho. But I agree with you, Andy. Especially, like, we don't know what Kaylee's offense is going to look like. Like, what if he wants to run a lot of two tight end sets, I think is possible. Like, he grew up with the Rams. Like, I know McVay's, like, you know, high octane. Even McVay likes doing a lot of two tight end stuff. So I think this offense isn't really suited for 11 personnel with Nick Kaylee. So if it's not suited for 11 personnel, and you have Nico and you have Christian Kirk, who, I mean, you went out and got. Mm-hmm. I think that they value him, obviously. It does lessen the demand for wide receiver. Now, I think they will draft one, like you said, Blankers, but I don't think it's going to be in the first round.
No, I would agree. I was going to say that if Golden's there at 25 and one of their kind of top of their draft board offensive linemen are still available, I think they go offensive line.
Yeah, Ocho, what's up, guys? Hey, draft Matthew Golden for the franchise day. Another texture. Do y'all think Nick might trade into the top five? Lance has Banks Jr. in the top five.
I just think it's too high, and the price would be too steep. I don't think so. I just – it's like when Andy said they're going to trade Autry, and they're going to – I just don't see that happening either. I thought that they might release him.
Didn't they restructure his deal?
They restructured his deal and signed him.
They did,
okay.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if I was remembering that correctly, if I was pulling a Clemens and misremembering. Nick Caserio did make a trade already today. He traded pick 166 and a 2027 fifth to the Cleveland Browns, his favorite team to trade with, them and the Eagles. He got pick 179, so traded down 13 spots. He got pick 216. He got pick 255. 179, 216, both six-round picks. 255 is the second-to-last pick in the draft. So, like, Mr. Irrelevance bridemaid is what he traded for there. I checked it on all the trade charts or whatever. It's, like, dead even. I think what might be happening here is that Caserio has some possible deals other places. But the team that he's dealing with or negotiating with is like, hey, give me pick 166. And Caserio's like, that's too much. What if I get you pick 179? And then he also got some extra draft picks with it. I think this is kind of like the general manager version of making change for a $5 bill, where it's like, hey, yeah, like somebody else is asking for a $5. Caserio's like, I think it's probably worth $3. So then you trade the $5, make change of it, and you give the guy $3, and you save the other $2.
And maybe it's precursor to something else.
I mean, that's my theory, at least.
Okay, because otherwise it's a nothing burger to me. And I think
absolutely.
And the fifth rounders obviously have more value than the sixth and seventh. But if it's only 13 slots,
yeah,
then roll with it.
Yeah, like I agree with you. Like if it's not a precursor to another trade, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Why would you make it? Like, is it because you want more players in the – and Nick Caserio would tell you those late-round draft picks mean nothing anyways.
Right.
Because he's always trading those away, and he likes undrafted free agents. I think it's a precursor. We'll just have to hurry up and wait to see about that. 713-780-ESPN. The only thing that scares me more than Nick taking a lineman in the first round is Nick taking two linemen in the first round. Look, it's plausible. Nick Caserio is a willing-dealing son of a gun, but I see your joke here. Nick Caserio is not drafted linemen. Unless Caserio is letting someone else pick, I'm worried about any O-line picks, says Aggie Matt. So there is concern from the fan base that Nick Caserio is going to be drafting more offensive linemen because his draft record in Houston has not been excellent when it comes to drafting offensive linemen. In fact, it's been very poor.
Yeah, and totally understand that. Yeah. By the way, when Kenyon Green was drafted, was he ever on with John and Lance?
He was definitely on our station.
So he
right?
was on with us. That's why I'm asking.
I don't think
the
he
question.
Was on. I don't think so.
Because Dell was selling them out today and crushing them, going, they're the curse for offensive linemen with the Texans because they've had multiple offensive linemen on. And he mentioned Kenyon Green a couple times. I'm like, wait a minute. The only people that had Kenyon Green on, because they actually got scolded for it after the fact, was we got him on because his agent was my buddy. I don't think John and Lance got him on.
You getting a little annoyed that Dell said that they had the bust of Kenyon Green on their show when it was really
just,
on our
I'm
show?
I just want facts
do you
to
be
facts.
The curse?
I don't think we're a curse because we didn't have multiples. They've had multiple
are you
examples.
To steal the curse
no,
away?
I just want credit where credit's due. We got Kenyon Green
curse?
On after he was drafted. No.
I can't believe you're fighting over Kenyon Green.
fighting over getting the proper
credit
due that we
curse?
We got a Texans draft pick on when you're
first round draft pick. Let's sell
and
hard.
You're not supposed to get those on except for the flagship.
Blankers wants the credit for
damn
draft
right
bust. Maybe the biggest draft
right
bust in NFL history.
Brian hasn't talked all day, and now he's jumping in.
Blankers
on it.
He wants the Kenyon Green love. Stupid Dell, what do you know? It was us that cursed Kenyon Green.
You'll
not
fart.
The bench.
Yeah.
He's having territory wars with Kenyon Green. I love it. 713-780-ESPN. All right, here's what I'm betting tonight. I'll let you know on the other side. Lots of them. If you want to fade them, I get it. I understand. If you want to tell them, okay, that makes some sense too. All right, it's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.